Alright, Rabotai. So we are picking up the bottom of page Resh Yud Beis. Thank you. So we left off with the epic cliffhanger. Exactly. The idea being that, remember, on one hand, the Machaber was comparing Pesach to Purim. So when it comes to Pesach, again, the nature of the Geula, the nature of redemption, is exceptionally clear. We go from Avdei Paro to Avdei Hashem. There's a transition from one Avdus, from one type of servitude to another type of servitude. We're servants of Paro, and ultimately, again, we don't become free in the sense that there is no longer a servant, a master to serve. We become free, and that we're no longer serving a human master. Rather, we are serving ultimately the Ribono Shel Olam. On the flip side, the Gemara explicitly says that when it comes to Purim, Purim is not that kind of geula. Because remember, again, the Gemara discussed, we said this yesterday, that in the Gemara says, why don't we say Hallel on Purim? So remember, one of the reasons the Gemara says is because Akate Avde Achashverosh Anan, because we are still slaves to Achashverosh. So you see over here that Purim doesn't have that same level of geula like Pesach. So if that's the case, ultimately, again, what is the redemptive nature of Purim? Last paragraph, page Resh Yud Beis. Hageula shel Purim. So says the Mechaber. This is actually quite amazing. The redemption of Purim. Inyana ladas sheyesh makom benefesh she'in bo avoda. This is an incredible yisod. The redemption of Purim is the recognition or the knowledge. I'm just going to translate the words and then we'll explain it. Is that there's a place in the soul where there is no servitude. The geula, the redemption of Purim, is the recognition that there's a place in the soul where there is no servitude. So ta klipa sheyesh la mechiyah bePurim, hu amalek, so ta safek, beira mechiyah samaleku, kasha yesh la adam avoda, yesh la safek. This is actually an incredible, incredible idea. So the Mechaber suggests the following possibility. He says that wherever there is avoda, wherever there is servitude, wherever there is a responsibility to serve a master, there's always suffix. There's always doubt. Now, what does that mean? Wherever we serve a master, there's always doubt. Whenever there are obligations upon me to go ahead and do something for someone or something else, there's every once in a while, maybe not consistently, but every once in a while, this doubt that creeps into my mind that asks myself the simple question, which is, why am I doing this? This, by the way, is an incredibly important yisod. Just to illustrate this a little bit, Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz says, he discusses the idea as to what is the psychology of sin, right? Why do people commit averos? So again, you know, there's always an interesting question to ponder. Why do people commit averos? So of course, people often think, well, because we have taivas, we have desires. So let's say a very simple exercise. If a person were to take out a piece of paper, right, draw two columns, right? Write on top of the columns, write the name of any particular sin you particularly like to do. And then go ahead and write pros and cons. So inevitably, which column always wins? Right? You mean cons. Good. Right? Meaning, right? Yeah. So for one simple reason, no matter what you get out of an avera, no matter how enjoyable it may be, how pleasurable it may be, there are many pleasurable averos, is at the end of the day, the cons, which represents, let me say it differently, the pros of the averos are always temporal at most. Meaning, whatever you're going to get has a limited shelf life. Whatever pleasure, whatever hanoi you're going to get, how long is it going to last for? Right? A day, a week, a month, a year, maybe even a lifetime. But the fallouts from chate could be eternal. This is why, like, if you approach sin on a very logical, rational level, and you make this pros and cons, the cons will always win. If that's the case, ask your Chaim Shmuel Levitz, why do people sin? See, he says something amazing. He says, because deep down, no one likes to be told what to do. Deep down, I don't want to be told what to do, even if it's God telling me what to do. And so it's only a matter of time until a person finds a way to flex their muscles of self-autonomy. It's only a matter. So, see, no one will ever say, Ribono Shel Olam, don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to do. Instead, what we do is we're a little bit more passive-aggressive. So we sin. but it offers us such an incredible insight. It's not taiva, it's not desire, it's not anything like that. It's just simply a desire to flex muscles of self. I will say, I'll give you a perfect dryad to this. Do you know what is the most common first word for children? The most common first word?
No.
No. You shot. No, okay, Katayna, I'm sure there's a, it's monosyllabic or whatever else. Why was it shot? Because deep down, what people want more than anything is they want control. They want control. And that's why the worst thing in life, I'll give you this one, so don't go on. The Maharal brings down. He says, Va'adam Arishon, the Torah says, Va'yikach esa Adam va'anicheru began Eden. Hashem Baruch Hu took Adam and he placed him in Gan Eden. So Rashi HaKadosh says, what does it mean, Va'yikach Adam? Lachol b'dvarim. He took him with words. So the Maharal asked, I mean, Rav Moshe convinced Adam to go to Gan Eden. So ask the Maharal, I don't understand. Why does Hashem Baruch Hu have to convince Adam to do anything? You're God. Tell Adam what you want him to do and he'll do it. Or better yet, pick him up and place him where he is. The Maharal says something amazing. The Maharal says that unless you get a person's buy-in for something, so their body could be there, but their soul is not. Adam, Hashem Baruch Hu realizes he could get Adam's body into Gan Eden, but he wants Adam's soul to be in Gan Eden. The only way to do that is for Adam HaRishon to buy into that himself. So we'll say at the end of the day, the reason ultimately we often sin is not because of taiva, not because of desire, but often because there is a deep-rooted desire to show we are in control, to not be bossed around by the Ribono Shel Olam. Which we'll say is an incredible yisod. I'll tell you where this comes up all the time. You know, people come up, you know, I'm struggling theologically with this. I don't know if I should do this mitzvah. I don't know if it, so I say, a lot of times, you'll excuse me, it's a lot of baloney. It's a lot of baloney. No one's that deep, or no one's such a profound thinker that they're struggling with the theological realities of the universe. Very often, there are two things happening. Number one, we're often just lazy, but no one likes to admit that they're lazy, so instead they like to ascribe theological difficulties to their religious struggles. You know, I don't know if I believe in organized prayer. I don't know really if this guy's really listened to our tells. That's a load of garbage. You just don't want to wake up in the morning. Come on, let's meaning tachlis, at the end of the day. Or I'm struggling with this, or I'm struggling with that. You're struggling with garnished. What you're struggling is with your own internal laziness. That's very, very important yisod. But number two, often what we struggle with is, don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to do. I know you're God, but I'm Shmuel Silver. Right? You might be the Melech Melechei Melechim, the King of Kings. I'm Shmuel Silver. You might create the universe. Don't tell me what to do. But none of us really articulate that, because at the end of the day, when you say it, it sounds so ridiculous. You say it, it's so crazy. But at the end of the day, that's what drives us a lot. This desire to want to be in control. And even if HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells me what to do, don't tell me what to do. So coming full circle. Why is this important? See, what the Mechaber points out over here is the following. Wherever there's an obligation to serve, there's always a certain element of suffix. Wherever there's a din of avdus, of servitude, there's a certain element of suffix, like, why am I serving this master? Why am I doing this? So Pesach comes along, and now we go from Avdei Paro to Avdei Hashem. Wherever there's avdus, there's every once in a while that question that creeps in that says, why am I doing all this? Why am I working so hard on this? Is this really necessary? Does God really care? Why am I spending my energy? I could be doing so many different things. He says, that's suffix, that's amalek. Kulam malayim, page reishud gimel. You have reishud gimel, right? Okay, good. Reishud gimel. Kulam malayim besekos. Aval kasher miskala hanekuda shel amalem enekuda zavoda. Ein sham, ein suffix. Kasher yeshna his dabkos. I'm just going to read one more line, then we'll explain. Kasher yeshna his dabkos b'melach machay amlochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yesh kilui shal havadai shmo. Ein suffix, yesh vadai. This is an incredible yisod. Now, we're going to say the words, even though we don't really understand what they mean yet. But the Mechaber posits, Rav Osai, and get ready for this, because this is mamish, mind-blowing, is that the holiness of Purim is even greater than Pesach. Because by Pesach, there's a transition from serving Paro to serving God. But the motif of the Yom Tov is servitude. The motif of the Yom Tov is bend your knee before your master. And wherever there's an element of servitude, there's always an element of suffolk. There's that day where I just feel overwhelmed by the servitude, and I ask myself, is this really worth it? But by Purim posits the Mechaber, there's a higher level. There's a Hizdamkus, there's a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We'll say that is on a level above and beyond servitude. See, Purim is not about reinvigorating or recreating our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a servant to a master. For one very simple reason, I will say, because at the end of the Purim story, we're serving a master already. And by the way, it's not God. We're still serving Ahasuerus. He's in charge. Purim represents a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is above the plane of servitude. And when you somehow connect with God above the plane of servitude of Osai, there are no questions. There are no sfeikos. There are no doubts. All there is absolute clarity. That's Purim. Now you have to understand what this means. Let's go on a little bit. He goes on. V'hinei roim sha'moadim maschil min Nisan. Osai is in another amazing ha'ara. We know the Yom Tovim begin from Nisan. Mipesach u'mistayimim ba'adr b'purim. Pesach u'miloshon pesach. So remember again, the Lashon of Pesach. So we often think that Pesach, ultimately again, Mishum Shepasach, because Baruch Hu skipped over our homes by Makas Bechoros. The problem is if that's where the identity of the day comes from, then in Lamais at the end of the day, that was just one event at the end of the Ten Makos. How does that define the experience? Rather, again, what defines the experience is, skip down to the second paragraph there. Sichon, Zeshu Melech, we're not going to get into Sichon right now. Humelech Heshbon, Yeshna Kan Machshava, Yeshna His Boninos B'Yetzias Mitzrayim, Chayiv Adam Liros His Asuk Lios Mitzrayim, V'Ari'iyo Hi Al Yidei Sipor Kechol Seidra HaLayla. So we'll say, what is the essence of Pesach? Pesach is Pesach. Pesach is the ability to see oneself as if he was redeemed from Egypt, from the servitude to Paro, to the servitude of God. And how do we experience this dynamic? By talking about it. By going ahead and engaging in the dialogue of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that's how we go ahead and we transition. We'll say one more paragraph, then we'll stop. Aval b'sof ha-mahalik shalamoadim, miskale nekudu legam reshona. But I will say, when we come to the end of the Yomim Tovim cycle, there's another type of geula that is revealed. Miskale kiviyochol, Shenishra b'sof b'mahalek shal avadim akate avdi achashverosh anan. So here's the interesting part. Right? The interesting part is that the Yom Tovim represent a cycle. If you think about it, by the way, the cycle begins with Nisan Pesach, and if the cycle begins with Nisan, then the last Yom Tov in the cycle is Purim. Now here's what's very strange. So we begin the cycle with the Yom Tov that is to celebrate our freedom from going from servants of Paro to servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yet by the time we get to the end of that cycle, by Purim, where are we holding? Akate avde achashverosh anan. We're once again servants to a human master. If we're once again servants to a human master, then what? Then how did the geula, how did the redemption manifest itself? Im kein ma shoresh hageula. If that's the case, Rabosei, then what is the geula? One last line, and then we're going to stop. Miskala kan gilishu lamala me'avdu shem nefesh ha'adam. It must be that Purim represents a level of redemption that is even above the avdus to Hashem. If Pesach represents the level of being servants to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then Purim represents a level of geula even beyond that. Umisham mikabel ha'adam es mekor chiyuso. And the Rebbe said, it's from the geula of Purim that a person receives their very life force, that a person receives the very essence of their existence. So we'll stop over here. Again, I know another epic cliffhanger for today. Again, but I will say, here's what we know. We know somehow that wherever there is avdus, there's safek. Wherever there's avdus, there's questioning. Purim somehow represents this level of geula that is above avdus, that is not about serving God as a master, but is about a deeper, more profound relationship, a relationship on which level there are no questions, a relationship on which level there are no sfeikos, a relationship that even though we're akate avdi achashverosh anan, the connection and the relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam really becomes the purest and the most intense connection we experience throughout the year. All right, we'll stop over here. Rav Shlomo will pick up Adam of Rishon Gimel tomorrow. Correct. We're going to see it's even more.